Hi, I'm Jacob.
And I'm Jessica.
Welcome to Whodunit, the podcast where we make wild guesses about fake TV crimes.
Without any clues, context, or apparently accuracy. All right, let's find out.
Who was right?
Who was wrong?
And who is dead? Heard?
Yes.
I think it started with the Beatles.
What did?
I think the British have some serious, serious problems with young lady sexuality. And I think it started with the Beatles.
Okay.
I mean, maybe it started earlier, but I'm pretty sure it started with the Beatles.
And
we're going to ignore a whole entire history of patriarchy to make this joke, or just roll with me.
Okay, sure. Yeah, go for it. Let's see this is going.
Well, so we're watching Father Brown this week.
Yeah.
And Father Brown for many years has like his, one of the co-hosts of the show, one of his dear friends in the show who helped go run around and solve mysteries with him is, what's the lady's name?
Lady Felicia.
Yes, Lady Felicia is his like standby character. She is a proper dignified lady. But yeah. She goes away at the beginning of the season that we're watching, season 5, I think?
Yes.
Yeah, see, she goes away to Rhodesia. So she's gone for a little bit. So who do they bring in to fix her up?
Felicia's niece.
Lady Bunty. Not Lady Bunty, just Bunty.
Yeah, Windermere.
Bunty Windermere. And she creates all kinds of trouble right away. She's just like, she's out there and being sexy, and I don't care about proprietary. I'm just out there, and it's just like, so my point is that at any time that these British shows want to like shake up the status quo and like cause somebody who's really going to cause havoc in the world, what do? They bring in a woman who's like has some sexuality around her. Like, Downton Abbey.
Oh.
To begin with, everybody was just, like, the whole first premise of the episode was this woman was having sex, and it leads to years worth of problems for their family.
Well, I will say, because we did not go for you, sorry, all the way back with Lady Felicia.
Yeah.
She is always on the prowl. Like, it's a little bit of an eye roll for Father Brown that Lady Felicia is always, like, looking for a man. She just got married, like, recent. I don't know what season it was that she finally, like, hooks up with Montague.
Point is, like, it is a woman who's looking to hook up with people. That causes all kinds of problems. Like, in Downton Abbey, when they wanted to shake things up again in later seasons, what happened? They bring in the promiscuous niece from up north.
Yeah.
Like, and I think I just think it started with the Beatles, where everyone's just like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
She's
just a woman out looking to, you know, like, be a little. She's not even looking to be naughty. She's looking to be a little naughty.
Yeah. But that's like, only because propriety is super annoying.
And that's what it is. Like, propriety is super. Maybe what it is the fact that, like, if it's just a guy looking to be naughty, then it's just like, oh, you naughty boy. You know what I mean? It's not like it's expected as opposed to a woman being naughty. Really upends, like, that's just like, oh my gosh, what are we gonna do around this? I'm just I don't know.
Well, and I will say, looking at the stills of this episode that we're watching today,
which you have talked about nothing but for the past week,
they're so great. I was actually surprised when we went back last night to watch episodes from earlier in the season,
right,
when Bunty gets introduced, and like you're saying, she's very like carefree, doesn't like propriety. She's been sent to Lady Felicia in order that Lady Felicia
can straighten her out because she's been seen cavorting at nightclubs. People, nightclubs.
Yeah, it's like top of headlines in newspapers in London.
Like, literally front page news with, like, headlines in the same size font as you would announce, like, they've invaded Afghanistan or something.
Yes. Yeah, so she's very carefree and always smiling and interested and curious about everything, which is great. But then in the pictures for this episode that we're watching, she looks serious all the time. And it just makes me sad. I'm like, what happened?
what happened to you in between these episodes?
Yes.
All I'm saying is, good grief. Brits, get it together.
All right.
But why don't we tell people? So yes, we're watching Father Brown. What episode and what is the logline, Jessica?
So we are watching Season 5, Episode 7.
We should also say that this is Season 5 of the current incarnation of Father Brown.
Yes.
Father Brown, there was the, well, I say classic, but that just from, is that the 80s or the 70s that the previous one was
sorry,
in?
Sorry, I didn't.
It was from the 1900s, people. That's how long ago it was. It was from the 1900s.
Yes. This one premiered in 2013, And this episode premiered in 2017. But
little pre-pandemic babies.
Yeah, and we're watching the 7th episode of the series, season, however you want to call it. And this episode is called The Smallest of Things.
Oh.
Because the log line is, well, hold on. The show log line.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Show log line. Yes. Tell the us show... for people who aren't familiar with Father Brown, which would have included me.
Yes. You had seen like almost zero.
Almost zero.
You
yes.
Would
by
watch
which
a
I mean...
little over my shoulder occasionally.
Exactly. Like I'll walk in the room and be like, what are you watching? Father Brown. Okay. Fine.
Okay. Okay. So this show log line, the early 1950s is when this takes place. Father Brown, a Roman Catholic priest, based in the fictional Cotswold village of Kembleford.
Which I asked, and apparently is not in Midsummer County.
No, it's elsewhere.
Elsewhere, yes.
Yeah. Uses his distinctive skills to solve various crimes. And this is like an hour long.
Yeah.
45 to 52 minutes.
This is your hour-long procedural, and his distinctive skills include more than just like knowing the Nicene Creed by heart and having to come up with a sermon every week. This is, and we'll talk about this a little more when we give you a little bit more of a bio of G.K. Chesterton, legendary British writer who came up with Father Brown.
Right.
But like he really is someone who really still does try to, like he wants to solve a crime because he wants order and justice to be restored, but he really is someone who does want to find the good in people and really convince themselves that they may have done a bad thing, but they are not a bad person. And the show is very concerned with showing how people make bad decisions, but like for maybe not noble, but for maybe some, like you can see the pain and the, like the desperation that led them to bad choices, as opposed to we're trying to track down the latest serial killer.
Yeah, yeah. And the villain, the murderer, may be actually a villain.
Is there...
and like a selfish bad person.
Yes.
But there are other people who seem to contribute to suspicious circumstances, but that's just their bad choices. So back to the episode log line.
Yes, please, the episode log
line. The Smallest of Things. Past and present collide when Father Brown investigates the macabre world of dollhouse crime scenes.
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. What? Dollhouse crime scenes?
Yes. Yes, this is a thing.
Okay. I'm assuming at some point a real person gets murdered in this episode.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Great.
And actually,
wait a minute. Are you intimating that you've done some, like, that you know about the murders already? Like, have you done some cheating in all this?
I don't know. I mean, I have seen the body, and I've seen a scene with the body, but that's, I mean, I had that when we were doing Shakespeare and Hathaway
Fair enough. Okay, yeah. So you're not, like, JFK, like, making your own little murder board over here and, like, zooming in and finding all the things
no.
that are already coming. Okay, great.
No.
Okay. So the guesses will be clean.
Yes.
All right. I have to keep up the sanctity of the game. That's just all
it's
that is.
True. The grandest game.
That's right.
Especially in this episode, I really have to do the grandest game. Do we want to talk about GK a little bit more about GK Chesterton?
Let's talk about GK Chesterton and his whole connection to this whole grandest game thing, because it turns out he has kind of a big connection to the start of like
he's
the
kind of
formalization.
A big deal.
He's kind of a big deal. Yes.
Yeah.
Got me in a real pickle here, Herd.
So he was born in 1874 and he actually died in 1936.
Which is a hell of a time period to live through.
Yeah, seriously. So he was an amazing person. He was a literary and social critic. He was a historian, philosopher, playwright, novelist, Catholic theologian, and apologist, debater, and mystery writer.
Which, after all that, is just great. Yes, even the greats like their popcorn.
Yes, yeah. He wrote around...
or they need to sell books to earn a living.
Well, there is a great quote. So he admits in... I don't know actually where this is quoted from, but many of Father Brown's stories were produced for financial reasons and at great speed. He wrote in his autobiography in 1920, "I think it only fair to confess that I have myself written some of the worst mystery stories in the world." At the time he had written this, he had given up on the stories, though he would later return to them and write more in the 20s. like a bunch more. He was very prolific. He knew a lot of interesting people. He wrote around 80 books, several hundred poems, around 200 short stories, 4,000 essays, mostly newspaper columns, and several plays. He, in case you're curious about his Christianity, he routinely referred to himself as an Orthodox Christian and came to identify more and more with Catholicism, eventually converting from Anglicanism. And he's been referred to as the Prince of Paradox. Of his writing style, Time observed, whenever possible, Chesterton made his points with popular sayings, proverbs, and allegories, first carefully turning them inside out. He was friends and contemporaries with George Bernard Shaw, H.G. Wells, Bertrand Russell, Clarence Darrow. And according to his autobiography, he and Shaw played cowboys in a silent film that was never released.
Oh my God, I want to see that.
Yeah. He was, as we mentioned, part of the Detection Club, a society of British mystery authors founded in 1928. He was elected the first president and served from 1930 until 1936, the year of his death.
And upon which I think I remember this, upon which he was succeeded by Agatha Christie.
No, well, three presidents later, actually.
Three presidents later. Okay, yes.
Agatha Christie served a really long time. Dorothy L. Sayers served afterwards. Ronald Knox, who wrote Knox's Commandments
for Mysteries.
Fair Play for readers.
Which is what started this whole podcast.
Yes, yes. So Father Brown was a vehicle, despite being written quickly and for financial reasons, it does seem that it was a vehicle for conveying Chesterton's worldview. Father Brown solves his crimes through a strict reasoning process, more concerned with spiritual and philosophical truths than with scientific details, making him an almost equal counterpoint to Sherlock Holmes.
There's definitely a lot more emotional logic and like human psychology logic in this than there is like, oh, because this happened at this hour, we know that the person must have done it, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's much more like, yes, much more about motivation and matters of the heart than...
Yeah. The inspector is checking the blood and the inspector is looking at fingerprints, but Father Brown is going around looking at paperwork and trying to see the connections between people.
He's trying to save people's soul.
Yes.
Like, he is much more concerned with like the I won't even say emotional well-being, like, but he really is like the spiritual well-being. Really is his big thing.
Yeah. This version is developed by Rachel Flowerday and Tassin Gunner. They collaborate on a lot of things. Rachel has also recently written adapted another story from a writer named Enid Blyton, iconic boarding school stories called Moonstone. They're popular on the Family Channel and it's Emmy nominated.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
Also popular in Canada and a bunch of other countries. She's also written on Marcella, Whitstable. She wrote on the thriller series Sanctuary, co-starring Matthew Modine. She has been writing for 15 years, a bunch of different shows, EastEnders, Casualty, a lot of continuing drama.
Is there doctors in there? Holby City, EastEnders?
Yes, there is a doctor.
There's a doctors. Is there a doctors in the writing staff?
Yes. Tassin Gunner, also, he has an MA in screenwriting, and he also went to the BBC Writers Academy. He won a BAFTA for a series called Killed by My Debt. And he was nominated for a Broadcaster Award for Father Brown. He wrote on also Doctors, EastEnders, Casualty, Holby City, Inspector Lewis, Sister Boniface Mysteries, and this show, Father Brown. Short note.
Yes, please.
About this. So Tassin and Rachel and G.K. Chesterton have the most writing credits on this show. 120 episodes so far. Kit Lampert,
who we now know. Actually exists.
We talked to him in an interview. He has the, I guess, developers. He has 17 episodes writing on Father Brown. Jude Tindall, from the creator of Shakespeare Hathaway, has only 15 episodes writing for Father Brown.
Oh.
Yeah. So, fun creating staff, very into mystery, these folks. But let's talk for a second about the actors.
Sure, please. Hit me.
So,
what do I need to know?
I was so surprised that you did not recognize Father Brown. And that cassock really just...
It just threw me off. It totally... Yes. Well, his glasses also threw me off. This guy's glasses are never on correctly. They're always skewed. The right one is always further down than the left one. If you look at it, they're always cockeyed. Always. I'm like, how are you even seeing this? I never noticed this. I'm like, oh my gosh. Yes. Anyways.
Well, it was fun for me when I was looking at him. I also did not recognize him.
Thank you.
And I was looking at his photo on IMDb. It's not his headshot. It's like him on a red carpet.
Right,
publicity and he's shutter. Wearing this wildly print colorful shirt mm-hmm. and jacket, and I was like, what's going on with this guy? Who is he playing? Then I was like, oh my god, he is best known for playing Arthur Weasley in the Harry Potter series.
Oh, my
and I was like, oh, of course. He's also, side note, in
There's
the
no
Borrowers.
Side note. These are the notes. These are not the side notes. These are the notes.
Mark Williams is his name. Is the actor playing Father Brown. He has also done a ton of TV. He's also known for his just like a couple of episodes, a little arc he did on Red Dwarf and another one on Doctor Who. He played Rory's dad.
Oh my God.
On Doctor
this guy's
Who.
A huge nerd. Next you're going to tell me he was on The Witcher.
No. Not yet.
He'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. He's also done Midsummer Murders, Inspector George Gently. He's also done Power Rangers.
Oh, I wonder if he knows Nick.
Maybe. He has also a series of documentary programs exploring his passion for industrial history, British industrial history. One of his series is called Mark Williams' Big Bangs, about the history of explosives. And he also has a follow-up called Mark Williams on the Rails. And then a series...
All of these could also be OnlyFans videos. Mark Williams, Big Bangs. Mark Williams gets railed.
And then we have Mrs. McCarthy, who plays Surika Cusack.
No.
I'm sorry.
You got that backwards
there. Surika Cusack plays Mrs. McCarthy.
Yes.
You're right. Who Mrs. McCarthy is the housekeeper and parish secretary. Surika is from a entertainment actor family. Her father and mother are both actors. Her grandmother was an actor. And all of her sisters are actors. Her brothers are director producers. And they're all married to other people in the entertainment industry. One of her sisters is married to Jeremy Irons. And they have two kids, sons, who are also actors, child actors and actors. And her father actually tried to discourage them all from going into the entertainment business.
Thank goodness. Somebody's got a head on their shoulders.
He kept a television out of their house. But alas,
no,
didn't
see,
work.
That's reverse psychology.
Yeah.
That's not going to do it.
Yeah. So her breakout role, going back to Surika, her breakout role was in Jane Eyre, playing Jane Eyre in 1973. She's been on Casualty, 75 episodes, Coronation Street.
Please be doctors.
I don't have that she was on Doctors,
okay.
But I mean, come on.
Yeah.
She has to have been. She also played Marta, the vampire servant on Discovery of Witches.
That is a great title. I love that title, Vampire Servant. I want that on my resume now.
Yeah.
Jacob Coakley, Vampire Servant.
So this was something I actually wanted to bring up at some point because I have a little beef to take off my chest.
With vampires?
Here.
We don't cotton to any kind of anti-vampire talk on this
podcast.
Well,
I'm sorry. I'm going to put this out there. Marta, I read this in the books, right? Because I haven't seen the whole series because it's on Stars and I just don't have that channel. So... Discovery of Witches. So here's this vampire family. They've been around since, I don't know, almost after the birth of Christ, like the Crusades and stuff, like 1300s. And they had
just after the birth of Christ, the
1300s. No, I mean, they go back even farther, but at least the 1300s is when Marta is bitten or becomes
a servant.
Their servant. Or has been their servant. So, like, what the heck? You are bitten by a vampire and you get, you get eternal life, right?
Sure.
To be their servant. Like, you don't get eternal life to be rich and, Like,
yeah, you get eternal life to be cleaning out chamber pots. Yeah, yes. Okay, I take it back. No thanks. I don't want that.
Making herbs for people. And yeah. I don't. Yeah. Yeah. So I was really pissed at that. I was like, really? Is that something that everybody wants? Like, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Watch everybody you know and love die and then be mistreated for millennia. Sounds great. Sign me up.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to be a middle manager for eternity.
Well, you're not even a middle manager. You are bottom of the rung.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm just thinking about my own life.
Oh,
like,
got it.
I just want to be a middle manager for the whole rest of my life. Please bite me. Like, no, no. Like, if you're going to bite me, I want to be like an heiress. I mean, this is very classist, but that's what vampires are. They are, when it comes down to it, they are classist.
True.
Because they just have money for ages and, ugh, yeah, it's the last vestiges of their aristocracy. Okay.
I love all this. Keep the social commentary on vampires coming.
Yeah, okay.
Once again, we are now a social commentary on vampires podcast.
Okay, moving on. We love you, Sirica, and I can't wait to see you on Discovery of Witches when I finally get to watch it. Okay. Next, we have in this episode, we do not have Lady Felicia. Actress Nancy Carroll went on to go do some other TV series. We saw her on Murder in Provence, by the way. We talk about her in that show in earlier episodes of our own podcast. Anyway, in her leaving, the writers sort of replaced her energy with her niece, Bunty, who is played by Emmer Kenny. And Emmer is a writer and actress.
Well, I should hope so, seeing as we see her on screen.
Yes. Well, but I'm saying she's a writer.
Yes.
And an actress. She has a few credits in her startup, and then she went to EastEnders for 59 episodes playing a beloved character called Zaza, or Zsa-Zsa. Probably Zsa Zsa.
Sure.
And then that was in 2010, 2011. And then in 2013, she became a writer on the show and wrote 33 episodes.
Good for her.
Then she wrote on Doctors, Holby City, Harlots, Red Rock. And she played this role on Father Brown for 46 episodes through the 2022 season. And then she recently became an adapter creator of a show called Karen Pyrie, which is a crime/cold case investigation show. And she actually has been nominated for a BAFTA and an Edgar Allan Poe Award.
Oh, good for her.
For best TV script for that show. Then we have Inspector Mallory as a regular, played
who
by
loves
Jack.
Loves to chew the scenery. Deem.
Oh my gosh, this guy, so much scenery. He is also...
Tell me his name again because I cut you off.
Jack Deem.
Jack Deem, thank you.
He has also done 64 episodes of DCI Banks. He's also done Casualty. Oh, sorry, no, sorry. He's done 64 episodes of this show, Father Brown. Mm-hmm. He's done 32 episodes of DCI Banks. He's also done Casualty, Doctors. Shameless,
oh.
44 episodes of the British Shameless. He's also been on a show called Clocking Off, 27 episodes of that. And last year, he was in an episode of Vera. So we could have seen him in that. Yeah. And then we have, of course, we can't forget Sergeant Goodfellow, played by John Burton. He's done 96 episodes of Father Brown since 2014. He's also been on Doctors, of course. He's also done Coronation Street, EastEnders. He got a start on Emmerdale Farm.
Well, all right then.
So then the guest stars we have in this episode, we have Mariah Gale playing Agnes Lesser. She has, a lot of these folks have great prestige drama mm-hmm. in their credits. So she has The Hollow Crown. She has Broadchurch, Doctor Who, Grantchester, Death Comes to Pemberley, which I think I'm going to rewatch that tonight if I have the chance. I don't know. I just adore that show. It's really fun. Colin Mace, who plays DCI Webb, he only has one episode as DCI Webb. I don't know what that's about. Maybe he gets murdered?
I was going to say, sounds like he dies, yeah.
Maybe. He has been in The Diplomat this last season. He was in Slow Horses, Young Wallander. He was also, fun little crossover, sort of, I guess. He was in The Last Honor of Christopher Jeffreys, which stars Jason Watkins from McDonald and Dodds.
Mm.
Then we have David Yelland, who looks so crazy familiar to me. He plays Wilbur Lesser. So there's definitely a family Lesser.
Family of the Lessers, yeah.
In this episode. David Yelland is known for playing the Prince of Wales in Chariots of Fire. He recently was on The Diplomat and in Endeavor, and he has done a bunch of guest stars on The Crown, Midsummer Murders, Foyle's War, Waking the Dead, and you might also recognize him for his role as Poirot's valet, George, from 1989 to 2013 in the masterpiece ITV Agatha Christie's Poirot, starring David Suchet. Then we have Chloe Howman. Sorry, just had to make sure I could pronounce her last name. She plays Lucy Lesser, probably best known for 122 episodes of Casualty and 18 episodes on Holby City. Recently, she's been on Doctors, but Doctors no more.
Doctors is no more, so yes.
She got her swing at it. And we also have a Florence Lesser, who is played by Sonia
Seville.
Are these all dolls?
I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off when you're saying people's names. But I'm guessing that all these Lessers, I'm betting that at least one of these Lessers turns out to actually just be a doll.
Well, I don't know. I guess, would you like that to be your guess? No. Would you like a prop bet?
Sure, yeah.
Who turns into a doll?
Who turns into a doll? Suddenly it's the Twilight Zone.
Okay, so I admit, when I picked this episode, so it was pretty highly rated. Mm-hmm. There are ratings at the bottom of IMDb if you want to look them up. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's watch this one. And I was looking for an episode with Lady Felicia, but this one was so highly rated, and it said, I just read doll and I was like, oh, I'm in. I want creepy dolls. Creepy dolls are different than dolls' houses.
Yes. And creepy creepy ventriloquist dummies.
Yes.
Different than also, doll houses. Yes.
Yeah. And so I'm excited for this episode in a different way because I do love the whole miniature thing. And that's what this is. I do find that creepy, weird, and macabre. I do. And cool. Whereas the other kind of dolls I just find creepy, like clowns.
Yeah. Creepy, weird, macabre, and cool.
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen in this episode.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because we're going to go watch a little bit of it and maybe make some guesses.
You ready?
How does that sound?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
See you soon.
So, Jessica, we took ourselves down not a blind alley, but we took ourselves on a left-hand turn. I can't believe we forgot about this. So these aren't just dollhouses, Jessica. These are dioramas meant to help the police solve cases.
Yes.
So these are I didn't know that. That's a real thing.
And that was surprising to me too. You were like, this is a thing.
Yes.
What?
And I think you sent me this story. It was on Atlas Obscura and Smithsonian Magazine's 2017, a whole bunch of news sources started writing about this. So I have to imagine some institute sent out a press release. But the dioramas were called Francis Glessner Lee's Nutshell Studies of Unexplained Death.
Oh.
And Francis Glessner Lee in the 50s was named the godmother of forensics because she, born from a wealthy family, she got a high school education, homeschooled. Her brother went to Harvard because that's what you did when you had money. But she was a woman, so she wasn't allowed to go to Harvard. But still, talking to her brother and having a life, she still stayed up to date with all this stuff. And then when she came into her inheritance, she still had all these studies she wanted to do. So she started talking to investigators about medical causes of death and investigating crime scenes and how it all worked. The problem was that back in the day, there was no way to train officers to examine a scene and not just come up with a hunch and then find evidence for that, but to look at everything and to find all the details and find all the clues. So she literally started making these little dioramas, 1/12 scale of death scenes. Some of them weren't always murders. But she would make them and teach, and they're still used to teach inspectors how to look at these things. So we're not just dealing with dollhouses here. We're dealing with, and the character Agnes Lesser in this even calls it grisly and creepy and all these things. And yeah. She's also much younger, I want to say. Frances Lee Gettner, she didn't start this until she was in her 60s.
Oh.
Because she, of course, had to live her life as a wife and mother and do all these things and have and wait until she came into her inheritance and fortune and had the freedom and the means to do this. But Agnes has started doing this in her 20s shortly after her mother fell down the stairs and died. The police ruled
10 years ago.
10 years apparently. Ago. The police ruled this a suicide. Not a suicide. An accident. An accidental death. Yes.
Because she supposedly had gotten out of bed to get a glass of water and then fell down the stairs.
Right. And any event. And all of this comes to light because the police, her father, who is chief of the constabulary or somebody high mucky muck, is giving her a certificate for developing all of these dioramas, which is such a boon to help him educate his police force.
Yeah.
So they're having this great big reception at her and his house, the father and the daughter. Daughter still is at home house.
Sort of a beautiful manor.
Beautiful manor, which is, it's photographed. Look at me. It's filmed beautifully.
Yes.
Like it's just gorgeous. Like the tableaus that are set up, like the people don't move. Like it's like there's this one scene where these two cars drive up and they park at just this perfect space to like make this lovely angle. They park right next to people who don't move. Like these cars like drive in and park. And like if I were right there and a car was driving up to park right next to me, like I would move and get out of the way. These people don't move because they are perfect dioramas of each of these shots.
Oh, okay,
it's
yeah.
Beautiful. Mm. Anyways, so it's at this man's. Father Brown, Mrs. McCarthy, and Bunty show up because Father Brown is super excited because, of course, this is all about forensic dioramas. He can't wait to see them. He knows about Agnes's work. He's excited to see it. Mallory is also there. Mallory is upset because the one guy who lives for one episode, Webb, Inspector Webb, who like transferred Mallory out to the Styx, is there, and Mallory and Styx have a little heated exchange as they're coming into this.
Mallory and DCI Webb.
Yes.
His boss who transferred him out to the Styx.
So then they have this great big exhibit where you meet all the suspects, Inspector Webb, Constable Lesser, Lesser's new wife, who apparently was a bit of a saucy minx. And
May-December romance,
and apparently she had appeared in some lad's mags, as it were, probably in some state of undress. That is the thing.
And we find this out because we see him looking at the bottom of a maid.
Of a maid, yes.
So he's
lechy.
Yeah, yeah. And then the wife walks by and knocks some very champagne on him. Spills some champagne on him. Oh, I'm so sorry. I just got your pants wet. And then Mrs. McCarthy's like, oh, well.
You know what they say about her. And the carpenter, there's a carpenter here who's very conspicuously the only black man in this scene. And like, it's clear that he knows and everybody knows that he's the only black man here. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying that like they should do better in their casting. I'm saying it's very definitely a point that this is what they're doing. Mm. And Agnes, when she's accepting her certificate, is just like, look, none of this would be possible without my
carpenter.
Thank you. Yes. Daniel Abelson. So Daniel comes over and is like, well, you know what they say about people who have wagging tongues. They should be cut out. And Mrs. McCarthy is like, whoa.
I don't think they say that, actually.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, well, I do.
Yeah.
So Agnes takes Father Brown back to her workshop. Mm-hmm. And the whole episode started with you watching her create this diorama. And what you realize is that this is the diorama of her mother's death.
Yes.
This woman at the bottom of the stairs with the blood pooled. And Father Brown is like, this seems like she seems to think that this is very grisly. He doesn't think so at all. She says she's working through some kind of therapy, trying to give voice to the victims and let people be heard. And she shows him the scene and she's just like, do you recognize anything? Now, this is where I get a little suspicious of her, because she's just like, you mean you don't find anything in the thrill of the chase or trying to find anything? And she's like posturing as if he really enjoys figuring stuff out. Like, and it's got that whole scent of like, I've just done the perfect crime. Can you figure it out?
Yes, it does.
Which is why I really don't trust her. But so she's showing Father Brown this diorama in her workshop. And then they cut to her showing everybody this diorama out in the middle of the house. My big question about this is, how did she get it from there to there so quickly?
Okay, logic cop.
I'm just saying. In any event.
All right. Okay.
We get it, Jacob. You notice things. Anyways, the father is really upset. the mother is really upset. Or
the not the mother.
The stepmother is really upset.
Yeah, his wife.
And so Mallory is just like, you know, maybe you missed something. And
yeah, yeah, because the inspector is... Yeah, and Webb, who said that he looked at every angle and they investigated it thoroughly and is trying to assuage her. But then afterwards, Webb, leans in and does actually look at the dollhouse.
He gets shaken.
And he sees a newspaper, a little tiny newspaper.
Right.
The smallest of things. And he picks it up. And then he turns around and walks down the hallway. This is after everybody's dispersed.
Everybody has said their language, and they're shocked
and yes, hot under the collar.
The chief has gotten upset and told everybody to go back.
And
to
it
the
turns out the carpenter didn't even know that she was making this particular
dollhouse. He didn't help.
He did not help. Yeah.
Yes. And so Father Brown and Agnes have a little chat outside about what to do now and what it is. And Father Brown's like, well, you know, you should talk to Webb because it looks like he saw something. There's a scream from indoors. You go inside, and Webb has been stabbed by a sharp, pointy tool. I think it's an awl. It might be a different tool, but it looks like that.
Yeah.
He is dead. And this is why I don't think it's Agnes, because Agnes was literally just outside with
right,
Father Brown.
Yeah.
Unless there's two murders. Unless, like, she's talking about trying to get away with her murder. But then why would whoever killed Webb was worried that he found some kind of evidence that would implicate the person who actually did the murder. So I don't think that it's Agnes. I do think we have a murder here. And I'm just going to come out and say it. I just think it's the father. Like, let's just go straight ahead with this. Mm-hmm. I think it's the father.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go right down the track they laid out for me. He wanted to get all busy in the pants region with this hottie lady. And we know that Agnes's sister died, drowned as a child, and I bet this woman was just consumed with grief and was not so much fun to be around. And he is just like, I've had enough of this. And one day in the middle of the night, I'm just going to doop, doop, doop. And he knows that it's going to look like it because he's the constable.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm just going to say the father. Because otherwise, they do a really good job of making this, like, really tight. Everybody's a suspect, and no one could have possibly done it. I am super impressed at this episode.
Yeah, I don't know what's on that newspaper.
Right?
Like, I'm thinking, is it the date? Is it the type of newspaper? Like, does it say the Times or this newspaper or that newspaper on top?
Or what information, like, could they, like, we know that something bad will have happened. Like, you know what I mean? Like, a factory will have been shut down, which could be, or... There's some kind of information backstory that we don't know about that could mean something. It's just like that maybe the wife figured out. So maybe the wife figured something out about the chief inspector, and she figured it out because of the newspaper. And so he was killing her to protect his reputation. I think now that I'm talking it through, I think that might be what it is, because I think he was worried that she had some. And maybe what she found out was that, like, this piece of information somehow reflected back on how their second daughter died,
yeah,
drowning. So maybe she figured out that maybe not wasn't even just bad for his reputation. She figured out that maybe he was somehow responsible for her daughter's death. But I think that's what it was, that the newspaper figured out. She figured out from the newspaper, the dead wife figured out from the newspaper something that would have implicated the police chief. And so he killed her. That's my guess.
So I think it is the stepmother. I think it's the new wife.
The evil stepmother.
Yep. Evil stepmother.
How very unfeminist of you, Jessica.
I know.
People gotta love who they gotta love.
I know. But yeah, I think it's her. I don't know. It's so dumb. Who else? I wonder if...
Hit me.
We didn't see the picture of the drowned daughter very well.
Right.
She kind of put her thumb over the face really fast. Or, you know, and maybe that's not super necessary. But I wonder if that child is not actually the inspector's child. And so I think that the dead wife had an affair with another man, and that is where the drowned daughter comes from. And I think that the new wife, the who I'm saying is the killer,
yes,
is actually the sister of the, like, the half sister of the dead drowned daughter.
Oh, so you think that the new wife is actually the daughter of the man that the dead mother was having an affair with?
Yeah.
Intricate.
Yeah.
Intricate and well done. I can buy that, sure.
Why she kills, I wonder if the drowned daughter, you know, she just refused to maybe take on the second daughter from another woman. And so this other daughter, who is now the stepmother, decided to take revenge for, one, her drowned sister, who she feels irresponsibly took care of her sister, mm-hmm. her half-sister, and also then is just angry at her for not having taken her on as a sibling, because got maybe it. Like her mother died at some point, and maybe the father was killed at war. And she's become a magazine model, and she's just done all these different things, and now she's met this guy. She's not related to him at all, because, you know, by blood or anything, because his wife
was the one who was having an affair with her father.
Yeah. And so she can marry him. It's not gross. But
no, it's kind of gross.
She's related to his other daughter.
Yes. All right. So we're going right down the middle here.
She kills DCI Webb because he realizes that there was a newspaper there,
right,
and that there was a newspaper article. And that article would have revealed something about her.
Do you think she was a page three
parentage?
Girl?
I think it's page six, but yes.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know when that came about. I just heard a retrospectors about that like a month ago, but I don't remember when that was invented. But sure, let's say.
Sure.
She's a page six.
Sure. She's one of those ladies, which is why the newspaper was so important. All right.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll find out if pages have anything to do with this or if we're completely off base. But I don't think we are, because they are usually very good about, they don't introduce people later on, is what I'm saying.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They like, here are the suspects.
Yeah. Oh, because, I mean, if they didn't, they wouldn't be going by
Knox's rules.
Yeah, by Knox's commandments.
Yeah.
And Chesterton, first president of that, I mean, that would be heresy if they introduced people later.
Right. We should have all the information. So, good job. We'll find out if we're anywhere close to any of this.
See you soon.
So, Jessica, there's a moment that we didn't talk about in the first act of this that I want to revisit right now. Oh, by the way, we didn't win. But there's a moment I want to go revisit.
Okay.
And it's when Agnes is being presented with her commendation. And she gets the commendation. She makes a short little speech. And everyone applauds.
Mm-hmm.
Or do they?
I feel like you're logic copping this again.
There's a point. I have a point.
Okay,
I'm building to a point.
Okay.
It looks like everyone's applauding, but if you look at their hands, you will notice, especially Commander Lester.
Mm-hmm.
Lesser. His hands don't actually touch each other.
Yeah.
He's so close to applauding. It looks like he's applauding. He's not actually
it's
applauding.
It's Reiki applauding.
It's Reiki applauding.
Yes. Also known as applauding on set.
Applauding on set. Yes, because you can't make no. All right. That is how I feel about my guesses for this. I was so close. I had every part of it to make it look like I was going to get this, but I still was not, in fact, actually correct.
You were Reiki correct.
I was Reiki. And as I've often said, there's no points for Reiki correct. That's an old saying. It goes down in the books. I was
ancient.
So so close. Massive spoilers, because we spoil everything. Of course it was Agnes. And if, like, so here's the thing. Agnes had a mental difficulty. So yes. Agnes wasn't actually herself, but she did, in fact, kill everybody. She, like...
She didn't kill everybody. She did not kill DCI.
You're right. She did not kill DCI Webb. But yeah. She killed her sister, and she killed her mother in this weird multiple personality fugue state.
Yeah.
And then was doing this diorama. Like, as she says, she wants to find the truth. She'll stop at nothing to do the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's digging her own grave to, like, finally get to herself to where she
turns
can realize what
she's
done.
Turns out that the little tiny newspaper, there was a crossword on it. And on that crossword, she wrote, mea culpa,
mea culpa,
mea culpa.
Yes.
And then she also puts the doll, makes a doll of her sister in her sister's dress that she died in, and puts it inside of the diorama. And then marks the heights inside. So I love the moment when the wife of the commander says, well, I think we're clearly all just avoiding saying what we really all know. And then everyone's like, what's that? And she says that there's a ghost, that Violet's ghost is back. And Father Brown's like, is there an explanation
let's just put that aside for a second?
It's not supernatural.
Which, so one of the reasons I didn't say that Agnes did it up front is because in my brain, the Mystery Club and Knox's Ten Commandments about, like, how to play fair with a mystery. And I had thought that one of them was that, like, you weren't supposed to do the whole, like, this person goes into a psychic fugue and doesn't realize they've done it kind of thing. And that is not actually a rule. So I was like, the person can't, like, actually forget that they've done it. That's cheap and hoary trick. But and by hoary, I mean hoary. Yeah. But no, if the commandment I was thinking of is that the detective themselves should not have committed the murder. So I was like, it can't be Agnes because it goes against this rule, which Father Brown would blah, blah, blah. So I had that wrong. I had the fact that the father was trying to protect people, trying to protect his reputation. He wasn't. He was trying to protect his daughter's reputation.
Right.
So, like, it's just, Jessica, I was Reiki close.
Yeah. And Daniel was trying to protect her because
saw her do it.
Yeah, he saw her do it. And oh my gosh.
So yes. So just like people almost applauding, I almost got it right.
Yeah.
And you were nowhere near.
I was nowhere near. And it turns out that all the pictures, the still pictures, are in the IMDb Pro of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at all of them and was like, wow, these are really good. They're very picturesque. Like, the composition is amazing. Wow. I saw every single scene, including her, like, about to throw herself from the stairs.
That was a great. So in the very, by the end, Father Brown has figured out that Agnes is behind it all. And also, Agnes is behind two of the three murders.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Lesser is behind the third. So Father Brown goes to confront Commander Lesser, and Bunty and Mrs. McCarthy come out because he's brought Bunty and Mrs. McCarthy into
to snoop
around.
Also is fantastic scenes. Heads popping out the sides of
so much shenanigans,
couches.
So much, like, physical comedy in this episode. So they run back in and they're like, because they're like, Agnes is not herself. She thinks she's Violet, which Bunty just gives her a little shake. It's almost as bad as a slap, being like, grab hold of yourself. Gives her a little shake, and then she's like, oh, I'm back. Anyways, Agnes realizes what she's done. There's this great scene where they all come into the room with the dioramas, and they look around, and they're like, I don't know where this is. And then they all disperse, except for Father Brown, who, like, takes two steps and then turns and looks up, and the camera pans up with him. And it's this great, like, the camera has been very locked in on, like, an eye level kind of, like, horizontal plane kind of thing in this episode. And then all of a sudden it switches to give you this vertical element. And you just see Agnes on, like, the outside of this, like, balcony rail, ready to, like, throw herself into the room with the dioramas. Great shot. You are 100% correct.
Yeah. And, you know, you make a good point about the horizontal then moving into the vertical, or like the diagonal vertical, because there are also so many great shots that are inside the dioramas and you see hands going into the dioramas or reaching into the dioramas from the top or from the side. And you see faces appearing in dioramas, like from the other side or whatever. So there's just all these different angles and perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so that switch of perspective, you're right. It's so interesting.
It was a great shot. I'm not sure if I actually gasped, but it felt like I gasped. It was like,
I think we might have,
Whatever. It's gasp worthy.
It was.
It's not like our guesses. You don't have to get that on tape. We're not counting whether or not we gasped.
Yeah.
I also want to say, as long as we're talking about all of this, like in the story of this, Agnes has made all of these dioramas. Clearly she didn't. Agnes is being played by an actress, but somebody made all of these dioramas. So like, massive props to the props crew.
People, yes.
Like, it's just amazing work. They did a really good job.
Okay, so they don't really mention any properties, people, mm-hmm. or list them in the credits, but there are four people listed in the art department. One is Chris Ford as a carpenter. Another is standby art director Becky Gilbanks and standby art director Katie Hooper and standby art director Sally Lucas.
Okay.
So if you're any of those four or...
And you did it or you know who did it. Yeah, please let us know.
Amazing. Great props.
Great. We'd love to give credit where it's due. Absolutely. In the middle of all of this, though, like back to back to plot and characters, like in the middle of all of this, Mallory just continues to chew up scenery and be a ding dang delight. Like he is all like he has a mustache and that man works that mustache.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, you're right. He's our mustache. There's always a mustache. There's always a mustache or a beard, right?
Yes.
In these mysteries. And he is the
one. Our mustache.
Another fun prop in this episode is, you know, we referenced how early on in the episode, the two Mrs. McCarthy and Bunty are talking, or Mrs. McCarthy mentions that the wife used to appear in a magazine.
Yes. Little scandalous pictures.
Laddie magazine. What do you call it?
Lad mags.
Yeah. So after a certain moment, she actually goes and looks and pulls out her old scrapbook.
Yes.
So there was a scrapbook with all her old pictures. And she's looking through them.
Oh, my gosh. That must have been so much fun for her as an actress to go in and, like, take those, like, old-time scandalous photos.
Yeah, of her sitting on a chaise lounge.
On a chaise lounge with, like, scarfs and, like what would be
flowers.
A modest swimsuit at this point. But, yes, they're scandalous back in the day. But, like, how much fun would that have been?
Yeah.
Like, to do, like, completely chaste boudoir photos in period clothing. Like, that just sounds fun.
Yeah, so that must have been a great moment. But then I also, oh my gosh, I don't know that I could have ever written a moment like this, that she is the alibi for Inspector Mallory.
Yes.
Because she was up in the bedroom feeling like nobody's ever looking at her. She's old. She's past her prime. Even her husband doesn't even look at her anymore.
Yeah, her
he's such a lech on the maid and whatever. And then she sees Inspector Mallory, who is all alone, has no alibi for him.
Right. He's out in the garden having a cigarette.
Yeah. He looks up and he sees her in the window and she pretends that she doesn't see him and then starts to do a striptease basically for him, as if she's just kind of enjoying herself by taking her shirt off and putting it to the side or to the corner, like giving him a little shoulder, you know, a glimpse of
her
and shoulders.
We're meant to believe that she like completely bears to him. But yes, but.
Yes. And I was like, oh my God. Like, what a piece of like who admits to something like that? And Father Brown makes her. He says, if you do not admit this, because she's like, no way am I ever going to admit this. And I was like, yeah, I'm with you, girl. And then he's like, but if you don't, then he's going to be hanging from a noose.
Someone will hang. Yes.
And she's like, oh, my gosh. OK, I guess I have to say something.
It is so like. It's embarrassing, but that's not quite it. Like, it is deeply shameful for her. It is deeply shameful for her to admit this thing. You're right. It is a great moment. I mean no disrespect to that moment at all, because it is such to even write that moment means to admit to that to that desire to want to be desired,
yes,
to want to be loved, and to be willing to do this scandalous thing to do it. Like it, like that, like it's an, like it's an icky feeling, but also completely human all,
yes,
at the same time.
Absolutely.
It's a great psychological moment.
It really is. And I mean, because the other thing is when she admits to Father Brown her feelings or where she is, mm-hmm, at the moment, I'm looking at her and I'm like, girl, you're a girl. You're still super young. I mean, maybe your husband is looking at the butts of maids, but that's because he's a lech and he's gonna, I mean,
yeah, it's nothing to do with you.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with you. You are a young hottie, even though she feels like she's getting, yeah, older. I mean, we all get older. It's a thing.
Time, but, damn, yeah, it. It's a kill. It'll kill you.
But yeah, I was really struck by the writer putting in this moment and like, what a monologue. She had such a meaty role. And then she does, when she does have to admit to Commander that she did this and that she is the alibi for, mm-hmm, Inspector Mallory, when the Commander hears her say that she's the alibi, that she was doing this, he calls her a whore.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, well, the fact is, I'm done with you.
Yeah, and she ends up leaving him.
Yeah, she packs her bag and leaves. So, yeah, I feel like she had the meatiest part in all of this.
She really did. I didn't really think about it like that, but you're right. She really did. Like, she went through some turns, and she's the only innocent one there.
Well, I mean,
she's the only innocent one there. Daniel saw a murder happen and
didn't
say
anything.
Commander Lesser saw a murder and didn't say anything about it. And, like, in fact, like, turned it into an accident to protect his daughter, but then murdered Chief Inspector Webb. Agnes clearly has killed two people on this. Like, the only other speaking role in this would be the wife, and she didn't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, you're right. Ugh, so sad.
Yeah. And it gets creepy. Like, it's creepy throughout. I mean, they really play with the whole dolls and creepy music. Like, she drowns her own doll. She drowns a doll of her sister at one point.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, places the doll murdered into another thing. It gets really creepy. At the very end, even, like, Father Brown even gets wigged out.
She ends up
in
a Father Brown doll.
Yeah.
She's
like,
where do you want to put it in the diorama?
And he's like,
And I was like, I think you want to walk away with it and make it a little doll in your office.
Yeah, this is nothing you want anybody, like the Father Brown. Are there Father Brown action figures? I feel like there must be.
Or I think he would be a good bobblehead, don't you?
Oh my God, a Father Brown bobblehead, yes. Like with glasses that maybe like fall off a little bit on it.
Yes, I did finally notice the awkward glasses position on his face that you were mentioning. Before that, I was like, I don't get what you're saying.
But who knows? Maybe it's just how he cocks his head to the side all the time. And maybe that's why they appear out of line a little bit.
I mean, maybe he's, you know, not a model. And so his face isn't completely symmetrical.
Maybe that's true, too.
I feel like I have that problem when I wear glasses sometimes.
You are perfectly lovely.
Well, thank you.
And for that matter, like, these are, like, his glasses are terribly askew. Like, this, we're not talking, like, we're talking, like, just, like, woke up from, like, falling asleep on the desk after, like, having studied for all night for your final exam in the morning. You wake up and you're like, whoa! Like, that's how his glasses are on this.
I wonder if it's something that's actually in the short stories.
Oh!
That Father Brown's
glasses
are
always askew.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious. So, but there you go. I got close. I got so close.
You really were.
But we, as we've said, breaky close doesn't cut it.
No cigar.
Well, we'll keep trying and we'll see what we can do next time.
Yep. See you next time.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it.
And now we want to hear from you.
Tell us your guesses, your scores, and your suggestions for what shows we should watch next.
Go to our website, cluedunitpodcast.com, or email us at cluedunitpodcast@gmail.com.
Or find us on Instagram and Facebook at cluedunitpodcast, or on Twitter at cluedunit.
And if you like the podcast, please rate us and review us on Spotify or Apple Podcast to help us get the word out. And maybe you'll hear your review read on the show.
Want to be a Whodunit private investigator? Leave us a few bucks at WhoDunItPodcast.com and we'll send you a personalized, official Whodunit private investigator license.
Officially approved by the totally fake podcasting adjudication board in their secret headquarters in a mountain outside of Squamish.
We hope to hear from you soon,
because watching TV is always better with friends. Wait, can I not say
no,
macabre?
No, that was perfect. That was, I was just, no.
Do I have to have the
macabre?
Macabre.
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 Macabre. This has been Americans trying to pronounce words.